Welcome, everybody, to the Chinchilla Pickin' Podcast. It is March the 17th, 2024, and 4:10 p.m. As always, we hope to be entertaining, educational, and uplifting because we want everyone to make money. My name is David Underwood, and I'm joined by the one and only Brandon Beaver. Brandon, how are you?
What? We've been doing this podcast for like 200 years now. You'd think I'd buy a new chair by now. It doesn't squeak so much.
Right, I feel like mine's getting ready to break here, you know, of all of our ad money when we had an advertiser. Yeah, by the way, if you have a business and you'd like to advertise with us, go ahead and reach out. we have been doing, this is our 150th show, isn't it?
Actually, 151. I think last week was 150.
We've done over 150 shows. We are so much better than when we first started, but still a lot more to grow, a lot more to learn. But yeah, we enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would do it if only two people listen, just because I actually learn a lot from Brandon, and so it's interesting to me. So
yeah, we have a lot of Spotify impressions, like a decent amount. We've built this show up quite a bit over the past years. We only had a couple listeners at the very beginning.
For six months, we had like five listeners.
Yeah, we would do this show if it was just us listening to it. But, you know, you're hard trying to find any financial shows out there, podcast or TV or radio, whatever form of media that you'd want to get it from, that have no agenda. And we are not selling anything except for possible ad time.
Yep, that's it. That's all we have, man. So we're not trying to get you to buy what we've already bought into or anything like that. Pretty straightforward about that stuff.
Yep.
All right. Well, I really don't have anything. March Madness is starting a week late. That's kind of interesting news. At this time of year, I usually cheer on the San Diego State Aztecs. Let's go. But also Nebraska Cornhuskers made it this year. So I'm kind of torn. What if they play each other? Who do I root for? I don't know.
Nice.
So
I go with the Aztecs because they have a better name.
Right? Yes. I used to hang out with the basketball team back in the day when a few other people were on the team. So good times, good memories. All right. Rules. Brandon and I get together 5 to 10 minutes before the show, and we tell each other what we're going to talk about. We actually do not discuss it. We have the live discussion here for you listeners so that you could get our back and forth, our bicker and our banter, just for you to digest and take where you want to take it. So, Brandon, you always lead us off. I'll let you lead us off, and then I got some stock twits to read after you finish.
Speaking of organizations with funny names, Dick's reported earnings last week. Like my transition there. That's one thing.
That was nice.
Now, starting today, is transitions.
I don't have good transitions. I just go, all right, well, we'll stop there and let's start here.
Yeah, me too. Until today now. But Dick's Sporting Goods, their stock it rose in early trading on Thursday, pretty high, after it reported its fourth quarter earnings. That's because they beat net sales and EPS, both surpassed analysts' expectations. They announced a 10% increase in its quarterly dividend to $1.10 per share. That's pretty high for a retailer. They paid $351 million in dividends last year. For the quarter ending in February 3rd, the largest U.S. sporting goods store, that's Dick's Sporting Goods, of course, they reported $3.88 billion in net sales. This is a record high. Adjusted income and earnings per share of $320 million and $3.85, respectively. Each of those figures were higher than analysts had expected. You know what? This was a surprise to me. Not because this isn't a good company. I think House of Sport is one of their new stores that they've introduced, and that's a very interesting concept for a store. If you don't know about it, look it up. There's a new one coming up to the greater Dayton area in Dayton, Ohio. That's opening up pretty soon here. I was surprised by this just because two of their biggest brands that they sell there, Nike and Under Armour, have reported pretty disappointing earnings lately. Nike's got their recent quarter coming up this week that they're going to report. But decent job here. Actually, really good job here. You know, if you look at Nike being their biggest sales, and Under Armour being one of their biggest sellers too, and those are underperforming, yet Dick's Sporting Goods still managing to knock it out of the park. Continue hiring and open up new stores. Not something that you're hearing from many companies this time of year right now. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, there are a lot of layoffs, but they're more tech-oriented layoffs. In fact, it's the highest tech layoffs we've seen in this country since 2001 after the dot-com bust. But nonetheless, Dick's has focused on that. For all transparency, Brandon, you did used to work for Dick's.
Yeah, I did, but it's been a while. So
it has been a long while. Yeah, it's been a very long while. But I just want to make sure that, you know, we're not trying to, you know, not hide that or something. I think they did well. And you're saying they did it without Nike sales, right?
Yeah, well, Nike had reported disappointing earnings. So I'm saying, you know, despite Nike's disappointing earnings, despite Under Armour, I mean, if you look at Under Armour just since its IPO, I mean, IPO'd at $41 a share, at somewhere around like $6 somewhere between $6 and $7 a share right now. And so taking that into account, you know, you're opening up new stores, you're beating on profitability, you're beating on revenue. Pretty good job there.
So where are their sales coming from?
You know what? I don't have that in front of me right now, Dave. And I expected you to ask that of me.
Well, I just want to know, because if it's not clothing, right? If Under Armour and Nike aren't providing the clothing sales, is it golf? Is it shoes? Well, is it hunting? What's the aspects that are providing this jump in sales here?
I really wouldn't be surprised if Nike and Under Armour were still doing well for Dick's Sporting Goods, but not for other retailers. I mean, Foot Locker had a pretty large decline in sales reported just recently. So I think the expectations here for Nike next week are to underperform, but we'll see with Dick's Sporting Goods overperforming. But well, I really want to be surprised if people are still buying Nike and Under Armour from Dick's Sporting Goods, but just not going to other retailers to do it.
All right, so I agree with that aspect, and I think like places like Foot Locker are just declining due to declining mall traffic, which still is happening. Just, you know, it's at a slower rate than what it was a few years back, but I still see that declining as far as people going to actual malls, quote unquote, rather than stores. Where Dick's Sporting Goods is more of a store location than like a strip mall or standalone by itself. Dick's Sporting Goods, and those tend to do better, I think.
Yeah, and Nike is their top brand. Nike is also 60% of Foot Locker sales.
Ooh, so, really?
Yeah.
Man. All right, well. We'll see.
Dick's Sporting Goods projecting, and here's where I kind of fall back on the stock a little bit, being where it is right now. 17 times earnings, not that bad. That's pretty good, but they're looking at comparable store sales growth between 1% and 2% next year. I'm not sure if they're actually factoring in new store openings over the next 12 months, because I think that they're probably going to have some more House of Sport surprise announcements coming up. But net sales for the full year, they're looking at between $13 billion and $13.13 billion. That's pretty good. Compared with $12.98 billion in 2023, adjusted EPS is between $12.85 and $13.25. I do question whether, you know, if this growth is topping out, if they're only looking at 1% and 2% growth for this year. But still, you know, that would lead them to another record year. So.
Well, I mean, it's a year that we've heard a lot of earnings reports come out and say we're going to have a weaker or a slowdown in the consumer demand. And now Dick's is coming out saying, hey, we're going to have growth. So, I mean, that's something that's different than, you know, majority of all retails. Not all retails, but majority. It's good. I guess I can no longer say that, all retailers are dogs right now. I guess I can't say that anymore because Dick's has proven me wrong here. But I mean, have they already factored in the cost of the growth, the investment? Is that already priced into their earnings that they released?
I would assume so.
Okay.
I mean, she did say higher merchandise margin for this year. So, I mean, I didn't see any numbers as far as what they're guiding margin towards, But I mean, if she, if Lauren Hobart, that's the CEO. So if she's telling us that there's going to be higher merchandise margin, I would assume they already know what those numbers, what, or at least what they think those numbers are going to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
So
so you buy, sell, hold?
You know, I'm neutral here. I'm neutral here. I would have been, you know, before this, if I would have heard this news, which, you know, we don't have that luxury, but it would have been a buy for me, obviously. But now, I mean, you know, 17% higher since they reported earnings just on Thursday. I'm neutral at this point in time. You know, 17% price to earnings, I kind of like that. But at the same time, if you're looking at comparable stores sales growth, which that's not that bad for a retail company that's as, you know, that's been around as long as Dick's Sporting Goods has been, 1% and 2%. But, you know, I'm neutral from here, just because of that number there. But once again, whether or not they factored in whatever, you know, new House of Sport openings that they may have, you know, and companies often don't do that because, there's so many different factors that go into opening up a new store, permits and such, that may push that off to the next fiscal year. So they often don't put that into their full year forecast, especially if it hasn't already been announced. So.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. Makes sense.
That's all I've got on Dick's Sporting Goods.
Okay. I thought you had somewhere else to go with this. I was waiting for some more. All right. So you're saying neutral. So for those who are listening, retailers do same store sales year over year growth. That's a number they look at. It's like with car producers, Ford, Tesla, GM. They look at like how many automobiles did you actually produce off the line, or if you're on Netflix, Disney Plus, you're looking at how many subscriber growth. So with retailers, it's same store sale growth. So this store here in place ABC. Where was it at a year ago? Did we have growth? And you want your same store sales growth to always be going up because that means that the stock's going to go up. But the stock did just recently gap up. I wouldn't even say gap up. It was over 2 month period, right? Would you?
Yeah.
It was over 2 months.
The 17% did gap up, so it was a 17% increase on earnings.
Okay. Well, there you go.
It was kind of a gap, kind of.
But I would still call that a gap. And so I would say just pause right now. Usually after a gap up like that, I mean, you're going to see at least a 2% drawback and then maybe move higher or stay right where you're at.
Yeah. It's, you know what? I don't usually do fashion, but this has become an enduring trending company. I mean, in the 90s, they had some issues, obviously, some big issues in the 90s, but they've rebuilt this brand in a way that is very sustainable, I think. So.
Nice. All right, man. What's next?
So with all of the data centers that have been announced, the transition to electric cars, clearly we're going to need some updates to the grid. We have had a spike here in the United States when it comes to demand for electricity. Grid planners anticipate that nationwide electricity demand will increase by 4.7% over the next 5 years. This is actually notably higher than their previous estimate was, which was 2.6%. Peak demand expected to grow by 38 gigawatts during this period. Factors which are contributing to this growth include manufacturing and industry, expansion of data centers, electrification, hydrogen production, severe weather. Recent trends show that the electric grid is currently unprepared for a significant amount of load growth. So what are we going to have to see here? We're going to have to see some politicians and stuff pony up. We're going to have to see some government money going towards this. And I think that your big winner here, once again, and I hate to repeat myself so many times, General Electric.
Okay, where are we going with wind? Is that what you're talking about?
No, it's not just wind. Have you paid attention to the show?
Are we going offshore wind?
No, I wouldn't even talk about wind because I hate wind. I hate the wind industry. But yeah, I mean, we might go there. Who knows? But the gas and power, electricity, and nuclear for General Electric has been great business.
Yes, it has. But nuclear takes 15 years. At least. That's the minimum.
Okay, but you know what? And here's the thing. I wish I would have pulled up how much how many power plants they already have on the grid.
So you
how
weren't
much
prepared
money they
for
have
this
in
podcast,
services.
Brandon. Is you were not prepared for this podcast, is what you're
Well, I
saying.
mean, I've already talked about how much they already have, how many, you know, how much they've got invested in gas power and such. I've already talked about that last show. But who's going to be getting that money? First of all, they don't only make these generators. They don't only make the wind turbines. They service what's already available too. So if you're talking about, you know, one of the largest electricity providers in the United States, Duke Energy, right? Who services Duke Energy? General Electric. Where do they get their machinery from? They get it from General Electric. So my question to you is would you rather buy one of the utility companies, which all across the United States, there's tons of them.
Too much regulation.
Right. Or would you buy the company that services most of those, and that's General Electric? I would buy General Electric. I like to go to the source, right? If you got high laptop sales, you don't want to go out and buy necessarily a laptop company. You'd prefer to buy NVIDIA.
Yeah. And so, but I mean, there's other companies that you could go solar approach if you think that the grid can't handle it and we need to invest more in other areas. So, I mean, are you going to do Tesla for solar? You know, I mean, what solar companies are you going to go with?
I don't know solar. There's too many companies in the solar industry that don't make enough money and that aren't profitable.
Yeah, but First Solar, first of all, First Solar is one of the few companies that this is when they solar first be, started highlighting and coming out back in the late 2000s. This is how old I am, about to age myself here, how long I've been trading or watching the markets. First Solar was one of the few companies that did not get a government subsidy.
Yeah.
They weren't dependent upon government subsidies in order to produce a revenue stream or profit. That's why I've always liked First Solar as a company, but they were great. They were really profitable for a while time. They tripled in value one week, and I actually owned them at that time, and I quickly sold, got out. But First Solar is a great company, but I don't know if they're positioned well enough to capitalize off that. But Tesla is. Tesla Solar. I mean, SolarCity was a company that was doing well, was making profits for Elon Musk, and he just combined it under the Tesla umbrella and brought it into as one company. And so Tesla still makes solar panels under the SolarCity name.
Okay.
And they produce it, and it's out there. And they do a lot of it, mainly in the Southwest and in Texas and, you know, Oklahoma, those areas. But they're everywhere, man.
Okay.
So I mean, if you're looking at it from that play and you don't know any names, I just gave you two good names.
Awesome. Why we do the show? So here's the thing, like, you know, anybody that you talk to that's kind of in the grid industry or in the power industry for the United States, I tell you that the grid infrastructure is kind of being held together by scotch tape and band-aids right now. So we're going to need some governments, you know, government money coming this way. Which company is going to be already financially stable, going to be a beneficiary of these subsidies and government contracts? And I think it's going to be General Electric.
So there's no benefit for Duke Energy to upgrade its infrastructure because there's no competition.
Right.
I mean, we're picking on Duke Energy here right now, but there's other energy companies, but we're picking on the one that covers Ohio, the region that Brandon and I live in. There's no competition, right?
Yeah.
So they don't have to compete against anybody else. So there's no need to actually innovate and improve because you have the contract. You are it. Versus if you go to a city, and this is where I went to college at, was in Lubbock, Texas. They actually have more than one power company, and they actually compete. And so they actually make improvements to their infrastructure and their system in Lubbock, Texas. And you actually get a better system in place than you do over here where there is no competition. And that's the problem with the electric grid in the United States, is that there's no reason for them to innovate because they don't have to.
And for anybody that's against free market competition, Lubbock, Texas actually has one of the lowest costs of living in the United States for any city. So
there you go.
I mean, I don't think there's any coincidence there.
Yeah, I mean, but my point I'm making with this, I mean, yes, I would not buy a energy company. They're highly regulated. They're only allowed to make so much profit. So it caps you on the growth. So yeah, the only way to play it is by buying GE if you think that's a good play.
Yeah, I think it's a great play. And I think that, you know, what you were just talking about, that lack of competition, the government mandated monopolies all across this country. I mean, we're still driving down the street and is looking at the same power lines we were 100 years ago.
You would think nowadays with tornadoes and the weather, we would start putting the power lines underground so that it would never be affected by it and you wouldn't have half as many blackouts.
I mean, who knows where we would have been by now with innovation in regards to, you know, power lines. Who knows?
Anyways, off that soapbox.
Off the soapbox.
Brandon's here. He actually made a call on GE in regards to this. I'm not going to have any call. I'm not buying anything based off this news. It is interesting news. It does give me something to keep in the back of my mind, but I'm not making any purchases based off of it.
So my call is buying General Electric and holding GE Vernova when it spins off on April 2nd.
But yeah, it's basically the same call you've had before.
at the very beginning, obviously. Not,
you know, but you just have more evidence for it, right?
Yeah. So last show I talked about this. I said that, you know, I was kind of undecided about it, and then I decided that I wanted to hold Vernova. My plan initially when I first bought into GE was to sell Vernova as soon as it hit the markets. But their performance is just out. It's been way well beyond what I expected. So.
All right, cool. All right. We haven't done this in a while, and apparently I was the only one who did my homework for the show and showed up ready. But Brandon and I we talked about doing things we read on StockTwits. So I have two things to read, so I'm going to read them. These are funny little things. If you don't know what StockTwits is, it's like Twitter, but just for stocks and investments. So you could, like, if you go on StockTwits, you search a certain company, say Tesla, and then you have a whole forum just on investors and retail and traders on Tesla. And you can read through it and get, sometimes you get good tips, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you get funny things like what I'm about to read here. So I pulled both of these. I have two. I pulled both of them from Ripple because I was investing in Ripple, but it went up a lot and I sold and took my money out. Here's the thing on Ripple. And this is funny. This is what one person wrote, and this was actually just today. He said, the good thing about this coin is if you don't like the price, just give it time. You can always buy it cheaper. I thought that was hilarious. I was like, nice, nice. And then what another person wrote on here, I don't know what's coming first, Jesus or the $1 for Ripple. Been waiting for both about the same time. So, I mean, that's the kind of nice comments you can read if you go online Ripple on StockTwits, sorry, and you start reading some of these. They get kind of funny, some of them. Some of them are just like, some have good news, some of them don't have, you know, pick and choose. It is what it is.
Yeah.
All right. So going in now to what I have here, I got a number of articles here. But first one we're going to get into is, yes, of course, it's a podcast and I'm talking, so we're going to talk a little bit about oil, right? I always got to mention a little bit about oil. This is actually came on a new Reuters Newswires this morning, 9:40 a.m., 3:17. And the headline reads, oil mergers, clean fuels via Vi for attention at Houston Energy Conference. So there was a Houston Energy Conference and everybody was there talking about what was going on. And some of the things that were mentioned was the fact that the actual cost of oil, like, so one quote from Daniel Yergin, he's vice chairman of conference organizer for S&P Global. He's a Pulitzer Prize winning author on global energy. Great, a whole list of accomplishments. He said, a remarkable thing is the price stability given all the geopolitical turmoil. So what he's talking about is the prices typically stay between 75 and 85 a barrel now for a few months, and that's a good sign considering everything that's going on in the world. Past conversations were dominated by market share battles between U.S. shale oil producers and OPEC countries, talking to price wars and then price security issues. That's, however, not an issue now. Why? Because, hold on, I want to quote this correctly. Acquisitions by Chevron, ConocoPhillips, and ExxonMobil turned the trio into the largest producers in the top U.S. shale field, meaning they've been buying up all these independent mid-cap shale producers and bringing them into the fold of the big, large-cap oil companies. That gives a little more stability towards price wars between the shales and OPEC countries. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. You could make the argument either way, Brandon, based on what we were just talking about, competition. It could be a bad thing. But it's also a good thing is that, you know, it is more stable. It doesn't fluctuate, go up to like $100 a barrel or then right down to 50, then back up to 100. You now have a little bit less of that giant fluctuation and a little fewer. So that might be a good thing, might be a bad thing. I'm going to pause right there. Brandon, thoughts on that?
You know what? I don't, if it's all done by the free market, I don't find it to be a bad thing. Trying to think, some of the biggest industrialists from the early 20th century made the same argument when they were making deals with their competitors before big government got in the way and started declaring monopolies and breaking them back up. They were making the same exact arguments that you're making, price stability, employment stability and stuff. And actually those are rational, real reasons. Those are, you know, not excuses. They're real reasons to do this kind of thing. But when it comes to government doing it, when, in my opinion, on the soapbox a little bit again, usually that inhibits competition because the government is a monopoly that you're never going to get rid of.
Right. You
can't go with another government, you know, usually. I mean, maybe England, you know, Britain can. Sometimes they do that, it seems like. But usually you can't say, I don't want the United States government anymore. I'm going to go ahead and go with another, you know, entity. Anyways, the point is that usually once the government gets involved, it does become a monopoly and anti innovation. So did it make sense? I was kind of mumbling.
It did make sense. So a couple highlights from this this year's conference. So notably, there was Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Iraq were not there. There was
OPEC is the problem here, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And this is the second year in a row that Russia did not attend. You know, and we know the reason for that. But yeah, so the three big ones from OPEC were not there for this. Energy symposium. Another highlight, a topic of conversation there was global liquefied natural gas developments, right? And U.S. policies were in big discussion here. Big exporter Cheniere Energy and Venture Capital Global LNG were a major topic, basically just due to climate policies, and they're worried because the United States had a production glut. And Europe is in a need of natural gas. They can't get enough of it. They're even in talks with Germany's mentioned that they might go back to buying from Russia more and more and more. They still have a little bit coming from Russia, never stop fully. But Nord Stream pipeline and getting that natural gas running and up into Europe because they need it there. But the U.S., we're sitting on tons of it. We have so much of it. And you know, Biden has current administration. Sorry, we don't like using terms on this show. We try to say administration. The current administration has come out against use of natural gas stoves and other items, and so it's been kind of a tricky moment, right? And so this is another topic that was brought up at this conference. So does, you know, I'm not selling natural gases. If you own any, I wouldn't sell any right now based off of that. I mean, we still have the availability to ship it overseas to Europe. North Atlantic tankers are still doing very, very well, paying over 10% dividend a year in shipping stuff overseas, gas and oil. So there's still those options there to move our production glut that we currently have here in the United States. But I'm not making any buys or sells on natural gas because we have a glut. And I don't think we could get it to Europe fast enough to sell it.
Yeah, and it's going to be needed for the electrification of the globe.
Yeah.
On top of that. So it kind of ties into exactly what I was saying, too, as far as the peak energy demand, natural gas goes with that.
Yeah, that power, it does power a lot of power companies, natural gas. I will mention, last week I did make a call on Rig Transocean, and I thought it would be a longer timeline than what it was. I was saying it was going to be at least 4 weeks before this really moved, based off the news of the CEOs expanding their exploration in the Gulf of Mexico. However, rig moved over almost, I think they went over 10% last week as a whole. I sold after I got a 7% gain. I was very happy with a 7% gain. I took my profit from that and I tried to lower my cost average in Tesla. I still have the original principal that I traded with, but rig did move higher because of this. And that's, if you don't know RIG, what that stock symbol is, it's Transocean is the company, and they own the actual oil rigs that do the drilling of holes over the ocean, on land, so on and so forth. BP or Chevron or something will go ahead and rent those out and pay Transocean to drill a hole, and then BP will maintain the hole after it's been drilled. That's sort of how those partnerships work, if you will. And I thought with the exploration going up in Gulf of Mexico, you're going to have to use more rigs. So therefore, Transocean is going to be inking more deals and doing very well. And it did see a nice increase last week. I took my profit on that. So I keep my eye on oil right now. I don't see anything from the news of this conference, anything to buy, other than, you know, the three big US ones, Chevron, Conoco, and Exxon, are continuing to consolidate amongst them three for U.S. oil. Wow, anything else?
Another 11% for Tesla. What's killing me right now about the Tesla thing, because you mentioned the Tesla, and by the way, good job on rig. Let's say that first. The Tesla thing, what's killing me is all these analysts that are calling Rivian a buy, but then calling Tesla a sell.
Yeah, and the thought is that people are worn out on Teslas, but they're really not. And Tesla actually announced, I think it was this morning, that they're raising the price on their vehicles in the United States, in Europe as well. Still not in China, though, because they have to be competitive, but they're raising the price. So that should be a boon to even more profitability for Tesla.
Well, there's a recession in China. You don't want to raise your prices in a recession. That's... killing yourself.
Well, I mean, we could get into this whole China thing, because I've seen articles that talks about China's not in a recession. They're going to be doing well this year. That's what Xi Jinping is saying, and he's trying to push that. He's trying to push that narrative.
I know, but you don't take what he says seriously,
right? Because what the other articles I read are that people who are graduating from college or university in China right now are using Tinder to try to find jobs because they can't find enough jobs out there. And I reported on this. I think it was it last week's podcast or week before? I was reading the numbers that there's not enough job openings for the amount of graduates coming out of college right now in China, that they have a job shortage. And so they're at a crossroads where they got to stop being a manufacturing country and start being a consuming country, or they gotta manipulate their currency yet again and just tell people, I'm sorry, we're a manufacturing company, I know you went to university, but go stand in the production line. You know, it's, they're at that crossroads where they have to make a choice.
They're using Tinder for jobs.
That's what I read. That's what I read today. It was today, earlier today.
I feel like there's been a couple of late night HBO TV series about that.
Has there really?
Well, no.
Okay.
Maybe gigolos. All right.
Anyways, moving on. let's go to this next one, Brandon. You might like this one.
Well, hold on. I mean, so Tesla, though.
Yeah.
Tesla, I mean, now down, what either they're saying poor growth for Tesla. I think they're not, you know, 20% year over year growth is what they're forecasting for. It was 40%, so it did get cut in half. China is very, very competitive for them, but they've got a very wide moat here, in my opinion, here in the United States for electric vehicles. They do. So, I mean, I think the growth here in the United States, there's still a lot more room to run here. And even in China, there's a lot more room to run, even though it's more competitive over there in their market. I think that 20% year over year growth, I think that, you know, maybe that happens this year, but I think it's going to bump back up again in years to come.
It's definitely going to bump back up again higher in years to come. I believe it. I own the stock. For anyone who hasn't been listening, I own Tesla.
Yeah.
And I believe in it, not just for the cars, but because under the Tesla umbrella, you have the solar panels, you have the charging stations, which, by the way, Tesla's winning the government contracts on those charging stations. And I covered this in the show a while back. I need to start numbering our shows. We can say, go back to show number 125 and you can listen. But Tesla is able to build charging stations that have both adapters, the two commonly used, versus all these other ChargePoint and Blink are only using one, and sometimes they're able to do two. So Tesla's winning the contracts on the government contracts for charging stations. So you have that, and then you also have the Tesla robots, and so, I mean, there's so much more to Tesla than just cars, and that's why I keep trying to tell people, like, they have a lot of other things that we haven't yet seen any revenue from. That once they start getting revenue from, it's just going to be a windfall for them. And so it's a great investment long term.
I think so too. And the price earnings ratio right now is 37%. I think that 20% growth is going to go up. But if you look at Meta, their forecasted growth is 14.2%. Price earnings on that is 32.9. So all these analysts are saying Meta's a buy right now. Valuation wise, Tesla is right about the same, if not lower. So,
right.
Yeah. It's just that sentiment is low right now. That's what it is. I mean, it's came back down to a lower valuation. For a long time, Tesla did not abide by valuation rules of the market until it did, which is normally what happens. But now it's a good valuation. I think it's a buy too. I'm going to call that right with General Electric.
Oh man, two calls in one show.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're probably going to have some tough times for the next 3 to 6 months just because sentiment's so bad on it, and analysts are coming out of the woodwork to call it a sell so they don't look stupid, but they're going to look stupid over the next year and a half to 2 years when this thing jumps back up 150%.
Yeah, and it's so analysts, the good and bad about watching stock news channels is you get these analysts that they want to cheer on a stock after it's already done 50% move. And then when the stock drops, everybody, you know, like Jim Cramer's on there saying, yeah, this stock is no good. Yeah. Bear, 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 or whatever his soundbite is for that. I mean, so like the analysts on TV are always following what I call the movement. And so I feel like they have to get on there and say when something's doing bad. It's part of their thing. But let's move on to this next one because it's big hot news and I want to cover this one. If we don't get time to my other articles, that's fine. I do want to cover this one.
Okay.
And this one is on Reuters Newswires. It was actually updated about an hour ago, but it just came across today and it reads, exclusive, Reddit's IPO as much as 5 times oversubscribed, sources say. So Reddit, if you don't know, it's IPOing on Wednesday this week, right? So this is a big IPO. It's a big well-known brand. So everybody's excited about a big well-known brand IPOing. It's always a good newsworthy story, right? But it's oversubscribed. So it's being oversubscribed by 4 and 5 times. People familiar with the matter said on Sunday, making it more than likely that the social media platform will attain the $6.5 billion valuation it seeks. That's going to put it in the target range of $31 to $34 a share. Reddit has already curbed valuation expectations after it was valued in a $10 billion private fundraising around in 2021. All right, I'm going to stop right here in this. So first of all, back in 2021, Reddit was valued at $10 billion, and they got funding based off that valuation price. Fast forward, 2024, Reddit's IPOing, and now we're valuing that $6.5 billion valuation. I automatically say, all right, how is Reddit going to pay back the other $3.5 billion it took on this loan when they're no longer valued at that? So now that loan is undervalued. So if there is any collateral, they have every right to call the margin on that or get some good deals on some stock before this IPOs.
Yeah,
that's my first problem. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, and then the second problem is that you're IPOing in the middle of interest rates that rose at record rates, and when you got increased interest rates and valuations are going to go down, especially on companies that aren't making any money. So
right. So
yeah, go ahead.
Let me get into that point. Right. So, you know, startups usually don't make money, but is Reddit still a startup? They launched in 2005. This has been almost 20 years now, and they've lost money every single year. They're currently trying to raise $748 million in this IPO. That's what they're trying to do. They lagged behind the success of other contemporaries that had launched at the exact around the same time as them, such as Facebook, Twitter, and Reddit has not done as well as they have. Now, Reddit is offering its moderators and other companies part of the stock. It was big, huge in the meme stock saga of 2021, Wall Street's bets, and so on and so forth. Was a big driver of some of these stocks. Reddit reserved 8% of total shares for eligible users and moderators on its platform. So they're really trying to get the retail buyers to buy in here. And then the only real actual news about the company that's in this article is it has an average of 73.1 million daily active unique users who use the platform at least once a day in the 3 months ending December 31st, 2023. And they had to do that for the regulatory filing for the IPO. Saying all that, advertising is a way a lot of companies make money, right? Nowadays, even Meta, Google, Instacart, half of its money's from advertising. I covered how Walmart was making money from advertising. A lot of companies making money from advertising. Now, Reddit, I don't know. I think right now it's a time where there's not really big. There hasn't been a lot of big names IPO. The last one was Arm, and not everybody knew about Arm, but everybody knows about Reddit, and everybody knows about the Reddit IPO, and I think that's what's driving this up, is that everybody has seen the stock market go up. We've seen these crypto meme coins that were launched back in November of last year, and the people who launched them are now multi-millionaires in just 4 or 5 months of time because they got lucky, and it happened at the same time the Bitcoin was up and everybody was buying all the cryptos, right? So everybody's trying to turn a buck into $1 million in a month, and I think that they think Reddit is the way to do it, and I worry about that state of mind. I don't know, Brandon, your thoughts.
IPOs don't always go as planned. Do you use Reddit on a regular basis?
I don't use quote unquote Reddit. I don't have a Reddit account, but what I do is, like, if I need to have a further understanding of a certain question I have, I will Google it, and Reddit results sometimes come up
alongside Quora.
Yeah, like Quora.
Every other website that does that.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, and I'm in a bad mood, so take what I'm about to say with a grain of salt, but if your business model is to advertise to people that use Reddit, I'm sorry, but neckbeards that live in their mom's basement don't have that much money.
Wow, my mic is on and I just went quiet. Wow, Brandon, ouch. Wow, okay. Well, look, there's more than just that on Reddit. A lot of people use Reddit than just those type of people that you're describing. Well, I mean, you see the people like, am I wrong for this?
And maybe.
See that, but one, and lots of different people use it.
The results I get on Quora are much more reliable when they pop up on the search engine. And I don't even use Quora on purpose. It just comes up.
Yeah, same here. Same here. Yeah. So the Reddit IPO, it's going to come out Wednesday. Let's see how well it does. I'm going to let everybody know right now, I'm not buying it. I made the same call with Instacart, saying I wouldn't buy it, and I didn't think it was actually going to go up. I made the call with Arm, but I said Arm's going to eventually go up based off its AI and its other core businesses. The core businesses are going to definitely push it up. But I had a longer timeline before it would go up, but AI drove Arm up. But on Reddit, I don't believe it's going to go up from where it's at, and I'm not buying it. So both parts for me. Brandon, you're...
No, I'm not. I'm just kidding.
All right, so Brandon's not buying it either. All right.
No, it's a bad time for them to go public. It doesn't make any sense for them to pick this year unless they're trying to use the money to pay down debt. And that's not a good reason for investors to buy an IPO.
Yeah, it's not. It's not, because that just means that they're eventually going to sell more shares, do reverse stock splits. They're going to do all kinds of things, dilute the shares to continue to raise money, to continue to fund the business. You have companies like this. They're called top ships, dry ships, I think there's one other shipping company that does this consistently on a basis that I would never touch at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's companies that do that. So cool. Let's move on here. I got one of two choices, and so I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go with the Microsoft one, man. I'm gonna go with the Microsoft one. I know I gave you the headline, and I didn't really go into it, but this one was headline reads: Microsoft tells European regulators. This actually, by the way, this came out today, just at 3:43 p.m. Just came out. Microsoft tells European regulators Google has an edge in generative AI. Why is Microsoft telling these people? Are they just coming out and holding a news conference saying this? No, Microsoft is trying to go ahead and merge, and they're in an antitrust court battle, and Microsoft is trying to buy, and I'm trying to get it here. Oh, man, now I can't find it. Oh, it's OpenAI. It's their investment in OpenAI. Europe is saying that, no, that's going to make you just anti-competitive. Well, they're saying that, you know, hey, Google has a more competitive generative artificial intelligence due to their trove of data and their AI-optimized chips. This is why you need to allow us to have this partnership with OpenAI so that we can grow ours. So they're basically admitting that Google has ahead of them on this and that they need this partnership in order to move forward. So it kind of makes you say, all right, Microsoft, do you deserve to go down a little bit now? Because now we were buying you because of your AI. And now you're saying that you are far behind Google and you need to have an acquisition to catch back up. Makes you question it. Google has a strong core business model. Their cloud business is amazing. Their, you know, office suites always great for Microsoft. They do very well in those. They have a great core business. AI was meant to be a boost to them, but they've been doing it through, I guess, purchasing partnerships with OpenAI, and Google's just been doing it on their own. Brandon, does this have you worried about Microsoft and AI future if the Europeans say no? You can't merge. You can't work together, or are you not concerned at all?
Well, they're already working together, and they've already got a fairly large investment with OpenAI that I don't think is going to change. I'm not too concerned about what Microsoft said. I think they said it for legal purposes only. I don't think that they're really telling the truth.
Really?
So I'm actually really honestly. I like the cloud business for Google, but the search needs to improve now. Because they've got competition now from Microsoft's Bing. I've been using Bing more often than I've been using Google search lately. And I own Google as a stock. I'll continue to own it as a stock. But they're starting to lag behind Bing. For sure. Bing's Copilot has been incredibly helpful to me.
All right, so you're seeing it from a consumer end, that Microsoft's actually doing very well, and they're just saying this to try to go ahead and get the European Union to allow them to have this $10 billion investment in OpenAI.
Right.
Gotcha. And that makes sense. And it does make sense that Google has the trove of data that Microsoft doesn't because of all the search engine queries and so on and so forth, which, by the way, is what Elon Musk said about X. Like, hey, I have a trove of data to build AI with because of people's posts in Twitter and X, you know, and I have the actual data that's ours to use. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, that was always Elon Musk's approach, saying that we are in great shape to really move forward with AI, and Google is in great shape to move forward with AI. And that is the one thing I think Microsoft was really lacking, was that trove of data that those two have. Like, Meta has that trove of data as well.
Yeah, it's a motivation between his feud with OpenAI also.
There you go.
It's why, because he wanted to be more involved and then he wasn't. There was some, you know, back and forth there. And then Elon Musk, for whatever reason, I kind of forget what it was, left OpenAI, and now OpenAI is doing great. So,
all right. Brandon, final thoughts. What you got?
You know what? I'm not going to be negative on Microsoft. I think it's a decent company to buy right now. As far as, it's a great company, decent valuation. Let me put it that way. Still saying buy General Electric ahead of the split and hold both companies after the split. Yeah, I like Dick's Sporting Goods. Okay, it's okay. I'm neutral. I'm not excited about it, but I'm neutral on it.
All right. Awesome. I don't have any calls or sales or buys right now. I'm just kind of holding on everything. I didn't see anything that really stood out to me this week. There's a lot of information. The Fed meeting is coming up this week. You have, Reddit IPO, and there's going to be some good things to watch this week. So for me, it's a week of watching, and I have that money from Rig if I want to. And if I find something to invest in, I'll definitely post it on our Instagram and try to get on TikTok as well for you guys. But as of right now, I don't have any calls or buy, but I am these new meme coins that came out in November. I know I briefly mentioned it. They have risen. If you go on there and you start searching them, like the Pepe coin, I'll give you that one. It has gone up since it was created by over 4,700 some odd percent, right? So you're going to get some young entrepreneur who created this coin and put it out there. And it's skyrocketed, and now they're worth, $100 million because they created this coin. I'm afraid they're going to feel like they're going to have the Sam Brinkman effect, where I'm so smart, I did this thing, which means I could run all kinds of companies. And it's like, no, you can't. You were smart, you're very intelligent, and you created this cryptocurrency, and you did this thing. Take your money, and hire somebody to help you invest it and grow a company. hire a CEO, hire a someone to help you invest is what my recommendation. If they're listening, I doubt they are, but if they are, that's my best advice for them. But as always, just do your research, pay attention, listen. If you come up with a good idea or a news story, do your research, and then feel free to ask us questions.
Yeah, and sorry to all the Reddit users. I'm in a snarky mood, so don't be too mad at me.
Seriously, I even got quiet for that one. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. Hit the subscribe button or name a chance you get. As always, we hope in entertaining, educational, and uplifting because we want everyone to make money. Have a good night.
Have a good night.